Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for August 4th, 2004. I'm your host, David McLaughlin. Joining me as always, welcome Catherine Smith.
Greetings from Atlanta.
And welcome back, Tim Shiflett.
Good evening, sir.
All right, we've got a big show tonight. We have tons to talk about. Also, we're going to get back on the show. This is probably about our third appearance from the Washington Examiner, Barnini Chakraborty. And Barnini's going to come in and talk to us stuff all the way across the country, national elections, and even the California Senate race. So we can't wait to talk with her about everything going on. But until then, this state, Georgia, this capital city, Atlanta, and in very acutely, the Georgia State Arena was the epicenter of politics. In the past, say, 5 days. On Tuesday, there was a rally for Vice President Kamala Harris, first time she's had a rally in Atlanta since she's become the, thought-to-be nominee. I guess she's clinched enough delegates, but that happened since Tuesday. And then Donald Trump and J.D. Vance came and did a rally on Saturday. Both rallies, the arena holds roughly 10,000 for an event like that. Pretty much capacity for both. I know I was there for the Harris rally, and it was capacity. There were no chairs on the floor for it, and they had the arena completely full and every chair pretty much full. And there was one area where they have a window to the city, and that area you had people kind of standing room only. I saw pictures early on of the Trump rally, what was, going on, and I think there's a structure a little different where they let people speak earlier in the program that are not Donald Trump, not the J.D. Vance, and it was not full. And by the time he started speaking, Donald Trump, it did appear to be pretty, virtually full. But then, of course, because he did these marathon speeches, it was not full by the end of it because it was kind of a long day. I believe it was a little hotter, although there was a rainstorm going into the Harris rally. But I'm going to get back to the one I actually went to before we start taking questions and comments on it. The energy in that building, it was like a party. It probably had more of a party-like feel than the time I went to the National Convention in 2004. It really seemed like a totally different enthusiasm level from a rally I went to back in April, a presidential rally. Now, this obviously was a much bigger place. The one I went to didn't have 1,000 people at it. This had 10,000. But this one got tons of national coverage. Virtually any picture you saw of Kamala Harris throughout the week, it was from that Atlanta rally, and people really took notice. And then, of course, I think the fact that the Trump rally was in the same location, the press really jumped on that even more. Catherine, you're an Atlanta resident. Can you tell, get a sense, even not going down to Georgia State, that there were two big political events within 5 days of each other?
Well, yeah, it was all over the news, and all my friends were calling from all over the country and from Brazil, my brother, asking about it and, saying, oh, we saw everything in Atlanta. And it was a big deal. And it was fun to see the performers and all the people who spoke. So I thought it was really good. And like you said, it seemed like there was a lot of enthusiasm and energy that we really need going into these last whatever, how many ever days we have, 85, 90. I thought it was very exciting.
Yeah. Tim, Catherine mentioned, the performance during the Harris rally. I'm sure you've seen the criticisms online. I'll tell you that from my understanding, 12,000 people Plus had already RSVP'd for the event before Megan Thee Stallion was ever announced. And being in the arena, while people thought that was interesting and exciting to watch, you could tell they were really not there for that. That was just an added bonus. What do you make of the criticism by Donald Trump and the Republicans about them having a, you know, pretty popular performer at this moment in time at the event?
If it had been perfect, Donald Trump and them would have still had something to complain about. That's all they do is whine. What, I mean, what else are they going to do? Talk about issues, you know? I saw a lot of that Harris rally. Some of it they were showing on the news or on the cable news channels live as it was going on. And then I saw bits and pieces later. And man, that you were right. That thing looked like a very festive atmosphere. It looked like it was packed to the gills. And it's been a while since I've seen a Democratic event with that sort of energy level. You had to, you were there. You had to have just felt the energy surging in that room, right?
You could, yeah, you could definitely feel the energy, but then something that's really also I'm finding so incredible is it's not the way that the poll numbers have moved. You know, they definitely have, but I think some of that is just the way they look at who's a more likely voter. But the favorable, unfavorable numbers for Kamala Harris have just flipped. You know,
yeah.
She was, you know, a month ago as equally unpopular as Joe Biden was, and I think a lot of that's unfair, but she, in some polls, she was actually more unpopular, but now her popularity, her approval rating, her favorable ratings are positive compared to her unfavorable ratings. It's just a total flip. Well, let's mention something about the Trump rally. It was in Georgia. Now, at the Harris rally, and I'm going to set it up through that, you had Senator Warnock, you had Senator Ossoff, and you had Stacey Abrams, who was the most recent gubernatorial nominee, all speak. At the Trump rally, you didn't have the governor, the secretary of state, the attorney general. They didn't speak because none of them were in attendance. They weren't even invited, and at least two of the three were attacked by Donald Trump or the campaign, the most notable one being the governor, the head of Republican politics in the state of Georgia, a swing state, who has done better in his last two elections than Donald Trump did in his in Georgia. Catherine, how big of an unforced error was this of Donald Trump to take time out of his campaign to attack seemingly a more popular Republican politician in the state of Georgia?
It was a dumb thing, but not at all surprising. He's still got it for him because of the 2020 election. He's still mad about that, about not finding him his 13,000 votes or whatever it was. And so he took this opportunity to go after him. Like Tim said, because he didn't have anything else to talk about, like policy or what his vision for America is. It's all just angry, whining. I don't know. He clearly doesn't have or isn't listening to his advisors.
Yeah, and not only did he attack Brian Kemp, he attacked Brian Kemp's wife.
Yeah.
Because apparently she actually, I guess in some form, is more on the record that she's not going to vote for Donald Trump if Donald Trump's to be believed about how Marty Kemp, the first lady of Georgia, feels about him. Tim, what does this do to the Republican electorate here in Georgia, one of the 7 to 8 swing states?
Well, Even if it hurts Trump a little bit, as we saw in the last election, that's a little bit that he can't afford when he lost by, 11,779 votes or whatever it was right along in there. And there are going to be some Republicans, and the three of us know a few of them, in this state who are just simply not going to support Donald Trump. And it's over stuff like this. And why did he have to say anything? It did not surprise me at all that the governor and these other officials were not invited. Because, frankly, Donald Trump doesn't like them and let it be known for a long time that he doesn't like them, and because they wouldn't help him steal the state mainly in the last election. But why say anything at all? It was no surprise they were not going to be invited. But why bring it up? Why do that?
Yeah, it makes no sense. Yeah, because there are places in which, those northern rim suburbs are key places where Joe Biden did far better than Donald Trump, where Brian Kemp did better than Stacey Abrams in the 20 to 22 elections. And so Trump needs to study that, or his campaign. I don't think he studies anything, but his campaign needs to study that to see where they pick up votes. But they're not going to do that. So they're going to continue to repel those voters. They've repelled a few more. We know Lieutenant Governor and friend of the show, former Lieutenant Governor, Jeff Duncan, is already on record. He endorsed Joe Biden. He endorsed Kamala Harris this week. He is not going to support Donald Trump. How many people are close to Jeff Duncan, Brad Raffensperger, Marty Kemp, Brian Kemp, and then get so turned off by this that they just don't vote for him? I'll be honest, we have a secret ballot in this country. There's a good chance that some of these people that won't publicly come out against Donald Trump may not vote for him. And then one more thing about Georgia that, I think everybody's got to remember, Georgia is a state where the trend demographics are getting worse for Republicans and better for Democrats. The people that are coming into the state that are entering the age voter rolls of this state and compared to the ones that are leaving, sadly due to passing away, the demographics are getting better every single year for Democrats in Georgia. And while Joe Biden may have been struggling with some of those voters, Kamala Harris is not. And so this just changes everything around. So why make this state harder? So now we got to move on to another topic because we've got a lot to talk about. And so we did not get a chance to really delve into J.D. Vance. And since last week, Catherine, there's been either five new things J.D. Vance has said or five new things that has been unearthed. How bad a pick has J.D. Vance been for the Republican ticket?
Yeah, it's bad. Every day it's something. He says something stupid or they find something that he's done in the past, or they find another name that he goes by, or whatever. I think it's really going to hurt them, or it's hurting them. And I think it's interesting that just either yesterday or today he made a comment about how the VP candidate really isn't that important. People vote for the president, not for the VP, and normally I think that's true, but this year I think that the VP candidates are, I'm not saying that they carry a ticket, but I think they're a little bit more important. I think on the Trump side, he's old, and from what we all can gather, doesn't live a particularly healthy lifestyle, so the chances of needing that vice president are higher than we've seen in recent past. And second, I think with Kamala Harris, and she would be our first woman president, I think there's some not concerned, but just we need to make sure we pick the right VP candidate. She picks the right VP candidate for her to carry her across carry her across the line and get elected. So I think he's wrong that it's not as important as. But I do think it's interesting that he would make that point. So he's basically saying that he's not that important, which is weird to say about yourself.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you this, Catherine. If a political prognosticator, if Alan Lichtman or Bill Snyder or one of the myriad of folks, if Barnini a few minutes from now comes on and says, you know, VP picks aren't important. They're not wrong. And Donald Trump wasn't wrong, but here's how he was wrong. The one person that can't say that J.D. Vance is a bad pick is Donald Trump because, A, he picked him, and if he's a bad pick, it calls Donald Trump's decision-making ability into question for the umpteenth time, and also a leader defends their people. And if he won't defend his own vice president, which we know he won't, because when they wanted to hang the last one, he wouldn't speak up for him either. How is he going to speak up for you? And so that's the biggest problem. He won't stand for his people. Here's what's bad. I'm going to tell an anecdote before I get Tim's thoughts on this. There's a guy that's 21 years old that's a wide receiver coming out of Ohio State University that they put him in, like, draft rooms, and they showed him bad pass after bad pass that his quarterback threw, and they wanted him to throw his quarterback he played 1 year with under the bus. He would not do it. These passes were indefensible. He would not do it. Marvin Harrison Jr. stood there and just stood by his one-year teammate. But Donald Trump, who wants to be the leader of the free world, won't do that to somebody he picked. He could have picked any Republican politician he wanted. He picked J.D. Vance. 2 weeks in, he can't stand up for the man. Tim, what are your thoughts on how the J.D. Vance rollout's going?
Well, not well. Look, Trump. This is pretty well documented now. Trump didn't pick his first choice. You know, you should pick who you want to pick. And he didn't do that. He let his sons talk him into picking J.D. Vance. And I do realize that when he picked him, President Biden was still believed to be the opponent. And you know, one of the positives that they thought Vance would bring, that he would appeal to hard right voters. He'd be like a clone of Trump, and he would really gin up that crowd to vote for Trump, because at the time, I believe Trump thought he was headed to a landslide win. Now, the negative there is that this guy does not, especially because of his mouth, appeal to moderate or swing voters. He's young, but still, doing things like calling Trump America's Hitler back in 2016 and a cynical asshole, among other things. All of that stuff is surfacing now, according along with everything else that he's ever said. It's like he didn't vet him at all or something. So this rollout has not really gone according to plan, and that's putting it charitably.
Yes. Catherine, if the results of the midterms, if the results of all of these special elections are to be believed, what is the Republicans' Achilles heel with the voters at this moment in time? What issue?
I think it's abortion.
I think so, too. And what issue is J.D. Vance, because the way he opens his mouth, an absolute train wreck on?
Abortion.
So explain why he picked him then, all these statements. Did they not vet? What do you think, Catherine?
I think it's a good lesson in not listening to your children. Not letting your children control your decision making. I think when he selected J.D. Vance, like we said, they were expecting to be running against Biden, and you know, if we were if he was running against Biden, it might have been a better a somewhat better choice because he's a young and healthful candidate, but still he opens his mouth and he has all kinds of weird things in his history and yeah, I don't think he was, if he was vetted, I don't think Trump cared what the vetting said. He made up his mind, you know, his sons helped him make up his mind and that was that, and he wasn't going to listen to anybody else, which is his way, you know.
Yeah. And he had plenty of time. He kind of waited on this pick. This pick was made pretty historically late, considering, you know, modern politics in which the conventions are a TV show. He waits all this time, and yet he still lands on Vance, who just today compared abortion to slavery. I don't even understand the, you know, the link there exactly. How those two are related, but
he just said, I believe there's some link. Like, he didn't even like expand on it. He just said, you know, I believe there's some connection between slavery and abortion. Like, what?
Yeah. Well, I mean, at least he's not putting dead bears in his car, but that's another story for another time.
Oh, God.
But we want to welcome him to the show for probably the third time from the Washington Examiner. Welcome, Barnini Chakraborty. How you doing, Barnini?
Hi, thank you. It's great. It's good to be back. How are you?
Good to have you back. We're doing great. We got lots to talk about, so that makes it easy for us at 7 o'clock on a Sunday.
Awesome.
Well, Barnini, you know, this is an interesting moment in time, no matter what, because it's the second time a woman's been the nominee. It's a Republican trying to, I guess, do what no person's done since Grover Cleveland. It was going to be a great election no matter what. But you are Indian American. We have a nominee who is a daughter of an Indian person who she's Indian American. And then on the other side, J.D. Vance married an Indian American woman. So as an Indian American, how are people feeling about this race?
Well, I think it's actually really interesting. I mean, Indian Americans right now, we're the largest and most politically active among Asian American groups. And it's really good to see representation in a race that reflects America. You know, as you said, a woman of Indian descent will be in the White House or be the second lady. And right now we've got five Indian Americans in Congress. We've got 40 in state legislatures. And we're a growing force. And that, again, it comes back to, it's great to see, because when I came to Richmond, Virginia, when I grew up, I mean, we didn't have any of that. There were five Indian families, and we kind of had to huddle together. I remember in my school, they were like, well, you're not white and you're not black, and so what are you? And I said, well, I'm from India. And they were like, no. And I'm like, no, really, I am. And so it is nice to see how far we have come, but, you know, we are a growing force, and regardless right now at this moment, if you are a Democrat or if you're a Republican or an independent, you know, we're just all really here seeking the American dream and embracing the American dream and really grateful for all of the opportunities. And so it's so great to see, you know, Indian Americans, regardless of what side of the aisle that you're on, being represented in such high offices, whether that's with Kamala Harris or the wife of J.D. Vance.
Yes. Now, let me ask you somewhat a related question, because you are also a journalist, and Donald Trump went to the National Association of Black Journalists and gave quite a performance, made a lot of news. And he made it kind of on several fronts, but one of them was calling in to question Kamala Harris's heritage, which if you've listened to her autobiography, which if I were running against her, I would take the time to do or read it, one or the other, so you'd know your opponent, you would understand her heritage. How bad was that, and how do you think that's going to play with
voters, both, you know, Indian American, African American, and just everybody else.
Yeah, it was a hot mess. It went from bad to nuclear in about 10 minutes. It was completely off the rails. I was watching it, but then I was getting texts from everybody that was there, and it was, I mean, it was nuts. Look, I don't know what's in Trump's head. I don't know why he was so combative from the start, but that's Trump. And as disgusted as some people were, some in his base ate it up. I mean, the hashtag crushed it had thousands of likes, you know. His attacks on Harris's racial identity and comments that she all of a sudden turned black are absurd. You know, the fact that he says that he's the best president since Lincoln for black people in the United States, it's maddening. But, you know, that's what Trump does. That's, you know, that's Trump being Trump. And I think the question then turns into, or the debate turns into, whether he should have been invited at all, right? And so, look, I mean, he's attacked women. He's attacked women of color. He's attacked people of color. But so the NABJ sort of knew what they were getting, but the NABJ has always invited presidential candidates to speak, and it's really a chance for them to hold their feet to the fire and to hold the candidates accountable. George Bush was there, Bill Clinton, Obama, they all went and they all faced tough questions. And Trump just sort of, I don't really know what happened. I mean, I guess he's just used to softball questions, and that's not what he got there, and that's what led to a manic meltdown. But he, you know, when it comes to racial identity, racial politics, it just doesn't work. It's not going to sway people who are moderates or independents. And I think that that was a very bad call on his part, and I think that most people recognize that.
Yeah, when he said she turned black, I was like, does he think he's running as a person or a banana? Like, bananas turn black, not human beings.
It was so absurd, and it was just so clear that he didn't know what he was talking about. The fact, and it's what you were saying, like, I mean, her autobiography, she went to a historically black college. She went to a black sorority. I mean, it's just going in with, like, the least amount of knowledge possible and just sort of speaking. I'm not really sure what he thought was happening, but he did say a lot of the parts out loud that people are like, oh, did he really just say that? Or are we hearing things? But he really did say those things. So,
I do wish, I wish somebody would have asked this follow-up question. Which did you think she was when you wrote the two over $1,000 checks to her campaign?
Right.
And saw what he said, and that could have been interesting.
And his daughter wrote the text, right?
Yes.
His daughter wrote the text for a campaign as well.
Yeah, early on, she was attorney general at that point.
Yeah. So I'm not quite sure what Trump expected. And also, it was supposed to go for an hour, right? And it just lasted 32 minutes before he stormed off. So I don't know. Maybe he's got some more work to do with minorities, I believe.
Yeah. Well, one final question before I pass it to Tim and Catherine, and that is about J.D. Vance. And more news came out this week about his relationship with his family. And it's really like, I have a feeling in person, away from the cameras, he probably has a wonderful relationship with his family. I have no reason to doubt that. But in the public eye, he really struggles. His wife and children have been attacked just disgustingly, and he did give a defense where, like, I'll love her, even though she's Indian American, I love her anyway.
It was the worst defense.
And then, of course, the kid, he told them apparently shut the hell up or something. So what is your thoughts on the way J.D. Vance is publicly talking about his family?
Okay, it is shocking across the board. I'm not quite sure what has happened to J.D. Vance or if this is what he was like from the beginning, but it is, and that's the thing with him. I mean, right, you thought that he was going to be one way, and then everything is coming out, and you're like, whoa, this isn't the guy at all. And then, you know, as an Indian American woman, if I was married to a guy who, you know, defended me from white nationalists and KKK by saying, well, you know, she's all right, she'll do, you know, I still love her, you know, despite her skin color, I'd be like, what the heck? What is that? I mean, it's absolutely absurd that he says those things in the way that he is with his family. And I think that's causing people, you know, giving people cause to just really kind of look into figuring out who he is. I don't think he's figured out who he is, but once he does, he should probably let the rest of us know.
Yeah, I just think the way he won't stand up for his family is just something that's going to repulse people in any kind of marriage or in no marriage at all. Like, you're just going to go, this guy won't stand up for his family. Once again, will he stand up for me?
It's like if you're not going to stand up for the mother of your child, then how are you going to stand up for America? How are you going to stand up for any of these, you know, these rights and values that you keep saying that you have? I think that we need to see much more of a backbone in J.D. Vance, and I think that that's what people thought that they were getting at the convention, and then it just kind of all fizzled away. So in order for him to, you know, really do a turnaround when it comes to his image, he's got to turn some things around. He really does, because he's not doing himself any favors with this lackluster performance that he's got.
Yeah, well, I'm going to make one last comment, and I'm going to pass it on to Tim. What I do find so weird about this is he comes from this rural family. His grandparents grew up in rural Kentucky and apparently were probably very old-fashioned. And so either A, when he introduced her, either A, they accepted her, which I hope they did, and that would show him, hey, even people that are really old-fashioned and not around diversity can accept people, or B, he probably had to defend her back then. And so if he can defend him to his grandmother or his mother, why can't he do it to some random people online that don't even matter to him? It's just repugnant. But I'll pass it on to Tim, and you can respond while Tim gets ready for the next question.
Sure. Yeah, no, it's really sad to see, especially because Usher Vance, her parents are, you know, I mean, they're great that she grew up in, you know, upper class California. They have great work ethic. Her dad's like this mechanical engineer. Her mom's this biologist. She herself, Usher Vance, has been described as being this really grounded, thoughtful person. Actually, she was a registered Democrat until 2014. But she's, you know, it's really sad to see him not stand up for her. And you wish that he would more, because she has stood up for him, especially in times when he has wavered and he has made some missteps. She has been there to support him. So it would really be nice to see it returned.
Yes, Tim, whenever you're ready.
All right. Good evening. Good evening. Thank you for being with us again. I know that you've written some about the rapid rise of Vice President Harris in Democratic Party politics. So exactly how did she rise up through the levels so fast? Or was there an element of luck involved in it?
It depends on who you ask, whether it was luck or if it was skill. She was at the right place at the right time a lot. Listen, I know that Republicans really want to slam her for her past, and she has had some issues in the past as a prosecutor, especially when it comes to the death penalty of a gang member killed a cop when she was a prosecutor, and she refused to seek the death penalty. But she learned a lot of lessons from there, and she moved on to attorney general, came up in a great place. And she's made this rise. I think it helps that she's from California. I think that it helped that she was in – she did a lot of networking. She knew a lot of people. She had Nancy Pelosi on her side. She had Adam Schiff on her side. So I think friends help a lot when it comes to politics. But that said, she has made remarkable achievements on her own merit as well. Whether it was as her time as a district attorney, attorney general, senator, and now vice president.
Mm-hmm. And now she is faced with a very important decision that everyone is waiting for and watching closely. And how should she go with this one? Would it be more important to pick a person that can help her win a specific state? Would it be simply the person that she likes and gets along with the best? Or would it be a combination of both these things that would lead her to pick the person she would pick?
Well, I think it would have to be a combination of both things. She has to have somebody that she gets along with because she knows the job that the person will be in because she's had it for the past 4 years. But it is really important for her, I think, to go personally, I think she's going to pick Josh Shapiro, Pennsylvania's governor, because, you know, it's a must-win state. And she does need to, he's extremely popular, qualified, charismatic, and he'll help her in places like Michigan. And, you know, he's been able to flip a lot of the red districts, and he's a moderate, and he has positions when it comes to oil and gas and when it comes to schools and even religion that will help even her out among moderates as well as independent voters and makes her more attractive. I really think mm-hmm. that he kind of fits the bill for both of those. So it's somebody that she likes, and it's somebody that will really help her strategically as she tries to win the race in November.
Mm-hmm. And I agree with you on that. I think he would be the perfect pick to balance the ticket. I want to ask you one more question before I send it to Catherine, and it's something that you have also written about that is extremely troubling because we've seen it in our recent past. We all know what happened in the wake of the 2020 election leading up to January the 6th, the mm-hmm. baseless charges about fraud and election theft, and you've now written about possible protest of the November elections. And I was wondering what all that would entail. I mean, are we talking litigation, or will we again experience what we experienced in 2020 with the wild denials and fraud claims?
Well, unfortunately, I think that you're going to already see the wild denials and fraud claims. I mean, we've got lawyers from both parties in almost all 50 states that have already filed complaints when it comes to the primaries. And then you've got it's shaping up to be a very critical race, but from both sides. I mean, you've got Republicans who have dispatched election monitors. You've got them going into every single state, so many in swing states. You've got volunteers, you've got lawyers, you've got election watchers, and they're ready to watch and they're ready to file lawsuits. There's so much money coming in for these lawsuits already, and not a single ballot has been cast yet. But you also have Democrats doing it as well. So right now, both sides are digging in, and I think, unfortunately, what we're going to see is a very long, drawn-out fight in November, and hopefully it will be nothing like it was 4 years ago. But, you know, people are manning their stations right now as we speak in almost every single state.
One final question about that. Are we talking exclusively the presidential race, or will this spill over into state and even local elections?
I can see it spilling over into state and local elections, especially when it comes to control of Congress, especially in House races.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And so we will, I think, see a lot of that, but the majority of it will be for the presidential race. I don't think that the super low down ballot races will be that affected, but all of them will be going towards who controls Congress, House races, as well as the presidential elections.
Well, I thank you for that. And with that, I'm going to send it over to Catherine. Catherine?
Great.
Hey, thanks for being with us tonight. We really appreciate your commentary.
I want to get back to
the Democratic VP pick just for a second.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there's any chance that she might just pull someone out of thin air that we haven't thought about, like someone that – I don't have any idea who it would be, but I'm just wondering if there might be some, military leader or someone
who. You know, I think that might have been an option had it been a normal race, but I think that because there is so little time right now, she needs someone that's vetted, and she needs somebody with name recognition and a record on things like abortion, climate change. So she needs somebody that can connect with voters and has name recognition already in order for her to use that momentum going forward. That's what I think, at least.
Yeah, I've just been thinking about it, contemplating if there's some other, surprise that might be in store.
it's been a crazy couple of weeks, so who knows, right? Like, in a month, we've got Trump nearly assassinated. We've got J.D. Vance. We've got Biden. We've got Harris. We've got, Trump getting Trumpier at NABJ. So who knows? Maybe she'll pick somebody else, but I don't think that's likely.
Yeah.
I might have to come on next week and apologize for that, but no. For me, like, I got that completely wrong.
We're all making guesses, right? It's like
a
giant guessing game, a giant puzzle that we're trying to solve without having any real
right. We're flying without a net right now. Yeah.
Right. I also want to go back to J.D. Vance for a minute. And I just feel like he's so full of, well, a lot of things, but he's full of he says one thing, but like for instance, he talks a lot about how women should be stay-at-home moms and take care of their children, and that childless cat ladies, that's me, shouldn't be able to vote. But here he is with this powerhouse woman who he's married to, who's the powerhouse attorney, obviously works outside of the home. And I'm just, like, kind of puzzled by, does he just,
I
are these just.
Most
go
people
ahead,
are.
Go ahead.
I think most people are, because when he came in there, he didn't like Trump. He was never a Trumper. He, had very strong views on subjects, which all seem to have evaporated, including, as we talked about earlier, defending his wife. I don't think that he has a good sense of who he is anymore, because so many of the core values that he said that he embraced and that he cherished, he's done like 180s on. So until he figures out who he is, I think it's going to be really hard for us to realize who he is. He's just like one big gray area right now, because every day something new is coming out, and every day he seems to be flipping on a topic. So I think
I guess the lesson from that is, let's find whomever it is that Vice President Harris picks for her running mate. Let's make sure they're really authentic and know who they are and can, verbalize that and talk about it eloquently. Because
he was a rising star. I mean, he had a lot of great attributes going into it. So for him to sort of fizzle out when it's most important, I think it's coming to a shock to a lot of people, including the Trump organization and the Republicans, because I think that they felt they had a candidate who was a little bit stronger and set in his beliefs and didn't really back down to questioning.
Okay. Are there any races that I know you wanted to talk about the California Senate race. Is there anything you want to
go deep on that? I told Dave that I did want to talk about that, but the more that I was thinking about it, I was like, maybe, do I really want to talk about that race? It's kind of a runaway race right now. You've got Steve Garvey, who is, this baseball Hall of Famer legend. He played for the Dodgers and the Padres, going against Adam Schiff, who, they're both going for late Dianne Feinstein's Senate seat. And it's been interesting. It's been a runaway race, actually. It's very peculiar. Garvey has now kind of not gone to the RNC convention because he said it was, not really worth his time to go, so that was kind of weird. But he is just fundraising a lot, but he's not really saying what he's about. He did go to Israel once, and I think that's what he's going to try to base his attacks on against Schiff, which is, you know, it's a little crazy because Adam Schiff, up until, you know, I mean, he's Jewish. He's been, you know, a supporter of Israel, but that's what Garvey is going to attack him on. So there really isn't that. It's right. I was about to say he's California's Herschel Walker, but I was like, ooh, maybe that was a step too far. But he is kind of in that situation. I think Herschel Walker had more of a fighting chance than Steve Garvey does at this moment.
Okay, well, that was informative. Thank you. Anything else that you burning ideas that you wanted to mention?
You know, I'm actually kind of working on this really interesting story. It's about the science field and how they're Trump-proofing science before. Well, the Biden administration is trying to Trump-proof science before he gets out of office, just in case Trump wins. So that means, like, they're trying to make it so Trump can't reclassify civilian workers, civil servants, and it will make it easier for Trump to fire people like Dr. Fauci or people at the National Weather Service. And so right now there is a mad dash in place to put protections in place for these civil servants and these scientists so politics doesn't bleed over into the profession. So I think that's pretty neat.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, that's why, you know, there's a lot of reasons that I think Joe Biden decided not to run. But I think those kind of things are part of it, is that, you know, he's got to be the president and he's got to make sure that he takes care of things. And that is really important and very interesting that they're, you know, being that aggressive about it.
Yeah, it's a mad rush to do it. Absolutely, and they're trying to attack it from so many different angles, too. I mean, they're trying to get collective bargaining agreements in place. They're trying to put new wording into the language. They're trying everything just so they can't, like, reclassify their positions and just so they can put all these protections in place. So it's interesting to see how the different tools that the Biden administration is using to make sure that they, as they call it, Trump-proof science before he leaves.
Very interesting. Thank you for sharing that. We'll keep an eye out for that piece when you finish it. And now I'm going to pass it back to David. Thank you so much.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Yes. Well, Barnini, we know we can go to the Washington Examiner site and find that story, but do you share things on social media or any handles you want to share with us? Just let us know those.
I will. So actually, probably the best place right now is just to go to WashingtonExaminer.com. And I am on X sometimes, but it's at Barnini, B-A-R-N-I-N-I.
You're like Madonna or Prince. You're just one name.
I kind of am.
Halo.
But you know what?
Yeah.
Until somebody else has the same name, and then you just get really territorial because there's another girl who has my name in India, and I was like, no, how dare she? And my mom was like, all right, calm down. But she got a lot of my hate mail, so there you go.
Barnini, I want you to enjoy that, because my name is Catherine Smith. And let me tell
you
never had that privilege.
But people could pronounce Catherine Smith.
That's
you
true.
Should see the variations of Barnini. I mean, some of them don't even start with the letter B. I'm like, where did you, how is there an N in, you know, how did you start it with, you know, the letter P or the letter X? Like, how is that even possible? But anyway. All right, thank you guys so much for having me. It's so fun.
Yeah
exactly. There's no Q in there? Yeah.
Well, so we're going to have you back at some point again, because we know that you seem like somebody that ought to be covering the best parts of the race from here on out, given your special perspective. So if you need us to tell your bosses at the Washington Examiner, we'll put a word in for you.
Please, I might actually take you up on that. So, but thank you so much. This has been a blast.
Thank you,
ma'am.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye, everyone. Bye.
Yes. That was Barnini Chakraborty of the Washington Examiner. Always good to have her in because she really does go to a lot of these events when she's covering these campaigns. In the midterms, she would be like at all kind of different U.S. Senate rallies and campaign events. But let's continue on with our discussion in the last 11 minutes. And y'all ask her about the VP pick for the Democrats. Tim, you kind of gave away who you were thinking. Now, Catherine and I went deep on this a week ago, but we can revise and extend our marks. But tell us, why do you like Josh Shapiro, but if you do you have a choice B and C ranked as well?
Well, yeah, I do have a B and C choice in this, but I just believe, as she does, first of all, the state of Pennsylvania is just so vital, and if he can help deliver that state, I see no scenario where the Democratic nominee could probably win the election without the state of Pennsylvania. So it's very important that we get that state. I think I like what I hear out of him. He will be good in that role. Also, I do like Mark Kelly. And you know, I like Andy Beshear. I like Governor Walz, but I know he appeals to progressives, guys. Is one reason he is on the short list, but I'm just not certain what he brings, being from the state of Minnesota. And number two, Governor Shapiro is younger. There seems to be kind of a youth movement thing going on, and everybody standing is young, and who's old? Donald Trump. So I believe Governor Shapiro is my pick here.
Yes. Now, let me ask you one thing. You mentioned being a good speaker, and I had not really ever heard him speak because we talked about it last week. He honestly got the fourth most attention of the two Senate candidates and his gubernatorial opponent, although his gubernatorial opponent was just making bad news. That's why he got so much attention. But so he was kind of lost in the shuffle for me, not being in Pennsylvania. And so I saw the piece where the Daily Show talked about how he speaks a lot like President Obama.
Now, he does. He does have the same cadence.
Oh, it's more than just cadence. They put a picture of Barack Obama on the screen, and they had him play it, talking, and you thought it was the same person. I mean, they didn't have the lips voiced together like it was AI or something. It was just trying to get that frame in your mind, and it was uncanny. And my question really to both of you, I'll ask you, Tim, first, since this is your pick, but I'll ask Catherine, too. While President Obama is an incredible speaker, and if there was no President Obama, Josh Shapiro would be a credible speaker. Could this be kind of a weird thing that it's not good that he speaks so much like President Obama and people might, you know, claim he's copying him, Tim?
I don't think so. Now Trump and some of his bunch are going to, of course, do that. But I don't think so. On a more practical thing, you know, unions seem to like Shapiro. Unions are not crazy about Mark Kelly. And Governor Walz, and I know we shouldn't really look at how people look, but he's 60 and he looks like he's my age. If we're doing a youth thing.
Yeah. Teaching school will do that to you, Tim. You taught 24 years.
Yeah.
Now, Catherine, same thing about the speaking cadence of Josh Shapiro. Could that be like more of a story than it needs to be in a negative way?
Well, I watched that clip, and it didn't me nearly as much as it struck other people. I just think that it's just his cadence, and I don't think anybody – I mean, I didn't get the impression that he was, like, copying President Obama. So I don't think it's – I don't think – I mean, unless the Daily Show just keeps talking about it, people keep talking about it, then it might be. But I think if we just let it roll, I don't think people will make that assumption.
Yeah, and I will say this.
Not my pick anyway,
ahead.
So.
Yeah.
Not my pick
well,
anyway.
Well, have you changed your mind on anybody? Have you reshuffled the deck any?
Well, I have two picks now. I'll be happy with any of the ones that we're talking about, obviously. But I think still like Andy Beshear, but I'm liking Walls too. I think he seems to have a nice combination of experience and understanding of issues. And I think he's sort of a might be sort of a balancing force in the ticket. But either way, I'm just hoping that whomever they pick is authentic and can, you know, speak eloquently and support Kamala in all the ways that she'll need support, both in the election, both in the campaign, and in the White House.
Yes. Now, I will tell you, you know, one thing that I do think's interesting and could be just like overkill then is Josh Shapiro was an attorney general. Kamala Harris was an attorney general. It's kind of like they double down on the same set of skills pretty well, so she's going to understand him, which could be positive. And obviously the math part of this, yeah, Pennsylvania, as everybody says, the tipping point state. But if you talk about bringing something else to the table, let's think about what government spends money on. At the federal level, government spends money on military. Who's the candidates with military experience? Walls has the most, and Kelly also has military experience. At the state level, what do people spend money on? Education. He's the only educator in the race. I heard a stat. I was at an event for kickoff, and an Alabama legislator spoke. $3 billion dollars of the Alabama budget is the general fund. $9 billion on top of that is the education fund, three times what the rest of the government is. So I mean, it's just he brings that experience where government actually spends their money. And I did hear this: Nancy Pelosi, who he served with in the House, that's her pick. Bernie Sanders, which I thought was kind of unusual. Because Walls, in some ways, to me, is a little more conservative than the Bernie Sanders movement. He represented a much more conservative district and everything else. He's his pick, and Joe Biden had two. He kind of had two picks. He was like, Shapiro's one, and Walls is number two. So I thought that was some, you know, interesting things. Beshear seems to have cooled a little bit. And then I will say this. The ads I've seen attacking Kamala Harris in the past week have been border, and more border, and he does represent a border state, although she does too, and she made point of talking about, you know, going through those tunnels and everything else when she was, you know, in California politics. So I think when you look at those pieces, it's interesting. Tim, do you get the sense that Andy Beshear, even though he's the youth face more so, that his stock has cooled a bit in the last 2 or 3 days?
Yeah, I think it has. I think really it's down to three people, and I think it's the governor of Minnesota, the governor of Pennsylvania, and the senator from Arizona. I think that's the three. It is interesting that she called those three back in to interview them again today. I would be happy with any of the three, and you know, like some of our big name Democratic celebrities have been saying on X and other social media. Let's remember, we need to win this race. No matter who she picks as her running mate, I'm sure any of those three will be perfectly fine and support her well and do what they need to do. We need to remember that.
Yeah, and Eric Holder's actually heading up the committee there, and he's an attorney general. It just seems like there may be, like, too much of a club for attorney general. They did eliminate Cooper.
Well, now, David, you know, maybe they need two attorney generals because they're running against the guy that's been convicted of 34 felonies. That's a lot to handle. You know what I mean?
Maybe so, and has more pending. And he has lost all the momentum. And, guys, we asked Bernini, but we didn't get a chance to talk about it. What he said at the Black Journalist Convention, he decided to go, which was kind of odd, because I think he thinks he has some appeal with black voters, which he probably didn't before, and he sure doesn't now. I don't know why he's into this false impression. But, Catherine, what did you make of that? I guess it was a Thursday appearance.
It was crazy. I got a call. I got a call from someone saying, you got to watch this. So I turned it on, and I was just, like, kind of gobsmacked by it. It was like a lesson in how not to engage journalists, right? Like, from the very beginning, he was just angry and hostile and ranting. He's in this, like, ranting stage right now where he's just, like, ranting about nothing or everything. It was racist. It was misogynistic. It was random and not in the least bit organized. It was crazy. It was crazy. That man's crazy.
Yeah, Tim, I'm surprised he didn't walk in and go, hey, who are you? I thought Brian Killebeat was going to be interviewing me at this event.
Well,
is that a lot of it that he's just used to softball pitching?
Well, yeah, my first thought when I heard he was there was, why is he there? Why did he do this? Why didn't these professionals that they claim they have in this campaign say, no, don't do this? You have nothing at all to gain by going there. He was under the illusion that somehow he was going to break through and appeal to black voters by going there and acting like an absolute fool. And it just turned into a disaster that you almost knew it would turn into. This guy, he cannot stand prosperity. He just can't do it.
Yeah, it sounds like you're learning about these supposed professionals. That there's no one that can. Remember the guy? That
yeah, nobody that can do anything with this clown.
That was supposed to be the best. Gunther Gable Williams, that was a great line tamer. This is the line that can't be tamed. I mean, you could pick the whomever you think's the greatest political strategist. I mean, you know, I guess on the Republican side, you know, someone like a Karl Rove, they couldn't handle him. He's just too much of a narcissist. Well, we want to thank again Bernini Chakraborty for coming on the show, and we're going to be on early next week. There's a few reasons for that, but we're going to do a pre-record, but we're going to go ahead and launch it when we record it on Thursday afternoon at 5 o'clock Eastern. Our guest is going to be Dr. Rachel Bittenkofer. She's going to come onto the show for I don't know how many times now. She's going to talk to us about Project 2025 and just how the campaign shifted and just anything politically, you know, that she can talk about with intelligence and reason. So we can't wait for that earlier in the week. But until then, night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night, guys.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest...